struck me that our world is not at peace. It struck me that it's all well and good that Jesus was born as a little baby in a stable 2,000 years ago. But the Prince of Peace doesn't seem to have brought much peace, don't you think? Everywhere you look around our world, there's war, there's suffering, there's all sorts of horrors going on. Hear the words from Isaiah 2 again. He shall judge between the nations and shall arbitrate for many peoples. They shall beat their swords into plowshares and their spears into pruning hooks. Nations shall not lift up sword against nation, neither shall they learn war anymore. But when, God? That's what I want to know. When is it going to be like that? We proclaim in Christian churches that Christmas is this beautiful, amazing time. We call over and over and over again our Messiah, the Prince of Peace. And yet every time we look around our world, we know that it is not a peaceful place. You don't even have to go to other countries. You can be in our own country. You can look at the domestic violence that's ripping families apart. You can look at things like world summits that happen in local cities and see that violence is ripping our world apart. You can listen to anything on television, hear the hatred and the anger that comes out of people's mouths. And you know that our world is not a place that is ruled by the Prince of Peace, don't you? And don't you long for that? Don't we long for a world where there's going to be no more war? Don't we long for a world where there's going to be no more hatred, no more injustice, no more prejudice, all of those kind of things? Don't you find that it would be lovely if the Prince of Peace really made the world a place of peace? In Isaiah 9, we read this incredible passage. It's a Christmas passage. It speaks of the coming Messiah. For a child has been born for us, a son given to us. Authority rests upon his shoulders, and he's named Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. We long for a world at peace. We look to Jesus and we look to the promises of Christmas and we hope that that peace is going to come. Except then we're forced to read what Jesus said, "Do not think that I have come to bring peace. I have not come to bring peace, but a sword." The sword he's talking about is division. Here we have all the prophecies that say the Messiah is going to come and there's going to be great peace, the kingdom of God on earth, where there will be no more poor, where there will be no more injustice, where righteousness will reign supreme. And yet Jesus comes along and he grows up and he's living his life and he's talking to his disciples and he says, "Wait a second. Don't think that I've come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword. I came to cause division. I came to separate a father from his son, a mother from her daughter, a daughter-in-law from her mother-in-law." I'm not sure that actually that he needed to come and do that. I've heard lots of stories there. But this is what he's saying. "I didn't come to bring peace. I came to wreak havoc in the world that you know." As if it's not bad enough to begin with. The Roman world around Jesus' time, the Galilean world around Jesus' time was a place of incredible violence. It had a history of rulers just executing anybody they suspected might be a threat, whether or not they really were. If you rebelled against the local government, you were likely to be either hung on a cross, burned at the stake, or just completely tortured beyond your imagining. Just if you said something wrong against the local leaders. The priestly order of the temple, the priests who long ago had been appointed by God to be set apart, to be intermediaries between the people and God and between God and the people, were now people who were appointed by the king. King Herod, and then by his sons, he just said, "You know what, this is the guy I want in power, so let's make him high priest this year. Let's make him high priest this year." Had nothing to do with God. People had forgotten their God, and yet they still cried out. In the villages, in the towns, everywhere they went, good people cried out, "When is this Prince of Peace going to come?" They would read the stories, the prophecies from Isaiah, from all through the Old Testament. "God, God, where are you? Our world is lost. Our world is forgotten. Where on earth are you? What on earth are you up to? We long for the Prince of Peace that you have promised." And then Jesus comes along and he starts to fulfill prophecies and people are looking at him. The disciples especially, they're going, "There's something here. There's something here. Maybe this world that we know that is filled with conflict, that is filled with chaos, maybe it's going to end. Maybe Jesus is going to kick out Rome once and for all. Maybe he's going to kick out Herod, Pilate, all the bad priests. Maybe he's just going to kick them out and he's going to turn this nation into a glorious God-chosen nation one again. How amazing will that be? And then Jesus says, you've got it all wrong. You see, you all think that I've come to be the new king so that you all can live at peace, but that doesn't last. I could live another 35 years and reign a peaceful kingdom, but it won't last because what happens when I die or what happens when someone kills me because they want power. You know, you think of the mythology around King Arthur and Camelot and how Camelot was this incredible place of peace and all of Britain knew great peace when King Arthur reigned. But then eventually King Arthur, well, depending on what legends you read, died or went off on a quest and never came back or whatever happened. And chaos reigned again. And Jesus says, that's not the kind of peace I'm bringing you. I'm bringing you a different kind of peace. I didn't come to bring the kind of peace you think I'm bringing. In fact, because of me, there's going to be incredible, incredible division. He promises peace that begins with the individual. Peace within. See, only if we are at peace can there be peace in the world around us. Nathan, you talked about trying to figure out what you want to do when you grow up. People often go on quests to find themselves. Have any of you done that? Sometimes you take a backpack and off you go and you look to find yourself. And you come back and maybe you found yourself and maybe you didn't. Sometimes we hit middle age. I had a birthday and I had to realize I'm now middle aged. But I'm reasonably okay with that. But you hit middle age and you suddenly start looking at your life and you go, I've lost myself somewhere. In the process, maybe you've been raising kids all this time, you've been working hard, you've been paying off your mortgage, you've been struggling through life, and you wake up one morning and you go, who am I? Where am I? What does my life mean anyways? We hit these crises, and it doesn't have to be midlife, it can be at any point in time in our life, we hit this point where we're not sure who we are anymore. We've lost ourselves. And so maybe we start looking, well, maybe I need a different job. And so we look to a job, and maybe that's where I'll find ourselves. Maybe we go and travel. We travel to Europe. We travel to Africa. Who knows where we go, thinking maybe I will find myself over there. We do all sorts of things to try and find ourselves. Sometimes people go back to school. They try different things. They get a new hobby looking to find themselves. The problem is they always wake up going, it still didn't work. There's something that's still missing inside of me. And that's because we look at all of those outside things as if those are the things that are the answer to our deepest longings. But in reality, it's only when we turn inward, it's only when we start to look at our own soul, at our own spirit, and see how it connects with the Spirit of God, the Spirit of our great Creator who made us to begin with, that we will truly find ourselves, that we will truly figure out who it is that we're supposed to be to begin with. Peace. Another word for peace, our word peace is very difficult. It's kind of shallow of a word. But the word in Hebrew is shalom. Many of you have heard that word before, shalom. See, shalom doesn't really just mean peace as in lack of conflict. It's deeper and it's bigger than that. Shalom means completeness. It means when you wish somebody shalom or you search for shalom within yourself, you look to be whole and complete. It speaks of healing. It speaks of the reconciliation, the reconnection where there was division in the past. First within yourself, then between you and God. Jesus said some really hard things. He said, whoever loves your father or mother more than me is not worthy of me. Well, some of us, we're okay with that, the child-parent relationship that way. We're okay saying, well, yeah, I get that I should love God more than I love my parents. But what about when he says, and whoever loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me? What are we supposed to do with that? Do you love God more than you love your own kids? That's a hard question. We live in a world that says you don't put anything before your own kids. You don't put yourself before your own kids. You don't put anything before your kids. And here's Jesus saying, if you don't love me more than your own kids, you're not worthy of me. If you don't love me more than your own parents, you are not worthy of me. If you don't pick up your cross every day to follow me, you're not worthy of me. Following Jesus is very, very, very hard. It wouldn't be so hard if he said, yes, I am the Prince of Peace and I've come, and everywhere I go there will be tranquility and there will be harmony and everybody will get along, and won't it be lovely? Wouldn't we jump on board with that? If I just follow Jesus, then I'm not going to have to deal with conflict ever again, because most of us don't like dealing with conflict. But that's not what he said. He said, listen, if you come and follow me, this is what you need to understand. If you come and follow me, there's going to be division. If you come and follow me, there's going to be a cross that you are going to have to carry. Now, let's separate here. A lot of people talk about, well, this is just my cross to bear. And what they're really talking about are the burdens that life throws at us, the illnesses that we have to deal with, the issues in our family and our jobs and the world around us. Those are burdens. The cross that he's talking about has to do specifically with following him. The cross that you carry comes about because you are following Jesus and because other people in the world around don't like it. You see, Jesus came and he brought the kingdom of God and it was present, but so were the kingdoms of this world. The kingdoms of darkness, which don't like the kingdom of light. And so they fight it. All the things like injustice and sin and arrogance and foolishness, all of those things war against Jesus' kingdom. Jesus' kingdom, which is about light, which is about righteousness, which is about humility, about wisdom. It's about worshiping God instead of worshiping all of the things in the world around us. And as soon as you step up and you start behaving in the way that Jesus would have you behave, as soon as you start surrendering yourself and allowing the Spirit of God to run your life, you're going to run into opposition. There are going to be people who don't want to hear about it. There are going to be people who persecute you. There are going to be people who seek to get you fired from your job because you're just causing too much trouble. If you start living your life fighting for justice, fighting for righteousness, and yes, fighting for peace, those who live and profit in unrighteousness and injustice and war are going to come against you. Sometime, Deborah, I'd like to hear your stories. Deborah fights against injustice all over the world. And there are people who don't like that. They don't like the words that she puts down on paper. One of her books got banned in Toronto, so I went out and bought it right away. I thought, wow, this must be a great one. This is what happens. This is what Jesus promises. Hey, listen, if you follow me, it's going to be division, there's going to be persecution, and there's going to be a cross. Won't that be fun? And not just a cross that you pick up and then you put down at the end of a day. The cross that you have to carry for the rest of your life until you die. See, nobody survives crucifixion. It always ends in death. Wow. How nice to be a Christian. If anybody here is not a Christian, has never said, yes, I want to follow God, come talk to me later. It's great. What's it all about? You know, in a few weeks, we're going to be looking at the baby in a manger and this beautiful scene and all of the stories that go around it. But we can't shake the reality that there's a shadow of a cross that hangs over that manger. We can't shake the reality that when God came, he said, I didn't come to bring peace, I came to bring division. Being a Christian is about surrendering ourselves to God. It is hard. This is the basis of what it means to pick up your cross. It means let go of yourself and surrender to God. It means saying, there's going to be less of me and there's going to be more of God's Spirit. It means, you know what? It's impossible for me to love you, but the Spirit of God who is in me can love you. So I will love you because of that. It means that all of my hopes, all of my dreams, all of my desires get put aside so that it is God's hopes, God's dreams, God's desires that get realized. It means setting aside things like what we believe we deserve and what our rights are. Our world is so full, our culture is so full right now of things like, you're worth it. You deserve this. How many commercials have you seen, especially car commercials? You deserve to drive this $80,000 car just because you're you. They don't know you. Maybe you don't deserve it. That's what it's all about. You deserve such wonderful things. That's not what Jesus offers. Jesus says, turn it all over to me. we look at our bank accounts. Before I went on holidays, I talked a lot about money, and I just keep thinking about it, probably because God's doing stuff in me as well. But how many of us look at our bank accounts and we pull out this amount and we say, okay, this amount is for God. The rest is for me. Do you know that not once in the New Testament is there any mention of tithing? Do you know that Jesus didn't have anything to say about tithing? Paul didn't have anything to say about tithing except to say, a tithe is not enough. Give me everything. We don't want to give him anything. We'll give a tithe. That hurts enough. But following Jesus costs us everything. And here's the thing. It's worth it. This is what is the paradox. This is the thing that doesn't make any sense. When there's less of us and more of God's Spirit, we actually become better parents. So we say, put Christ before our children. How is that a good thing to do? That's not good parenting, except it is. Because if you put Christ first, you start to transform into the image of Christ himself, and you become a better parent. You start to exhibit the fruits of the Spirit: gentleness, self-control, patience. Oh, wouldn't that be nice? If you put Jesus Christ ahead of your parents, you become more Christ-like. And you have more to offer your parents as they transition maybe into retirement living or into nursing home living, as you deal with things like dementia or Parkinson's or Alzheimer's or the myriad of other things that afflict our world. You have it in you to develop because you have the Spirit of God living in you. If you put Jesus Christ first, you will even be able to love your mother-in-law. Something that for some of you is impossible without the Spirit of God. See, this is what it's about. It's not about saying, turn your back on everybody, hate everybody. It's about saying there is going to be division. But here's the way to get around it. Here's the way that the kingdom of God is going to become present in this world around us. If you individually, just you alone, surrender yourself and let me live through you, then we're one person closer to the kingdom of God being realized. And then if the person beside you does the same thing and says, I surrender myself, I call Jesus my Lord, I give it all over to you, we're another person closer to the kingdom of God. You see how much better that is than Jesus coming along 2,000 years ago, maybe reigning for about 30 years and being a king? How great would that be? Maybe peace for a few years, as opposed to the absolute transformation of each person into the image of Christ himself. That's lasting peace. That's what the kingdom of God is all about. Jesus said, those who find their life will lose it. You go off on your trek across the world looking for yourself. You find yourself somewhere. You'll lose it. If you turn to God and you give up your life, you lose your life by surrendering it, by sacrificing it to the Spirit of God, you will gain life. It's this incredible paradox. And it's the most incredible thing. It is so hard to surrender ourselves. It is so hard to let go of us and let go of the control and our wants and our desires. But when you do, the freedom that you experience is like nothing you can even imagine. The inner peace at being reconciled with God, reconciled with yourself, and therefore capable to be reconciled with the world around you is absolutely incredible. Yeah, following Jesus is hard. Yeah, it means picking up a cross. Yes, it means division left, right, and center. But it also means finally finding your life, finding yourself, knowing who you are, and being the best possible person that you are ever intended to be. I went to a church in the States when I was down there on my holidays, and the preacher had a great sentence that I loved. He said, you are who you are, not because of who you are. You are who you are, not because of who you are. You are who you are, not because of who you are, but because of who the Spirit is who lives within you. You are so much better when the Spirit is allowed to live in you, when you let go of yourself and make more of God. This is what Advent invites us to. Advent is a time of reflection. Advent is a time of waiting. It's a time of remembering that the peace Jesus brings is a different kind of peace. It's a wholeness, a completeness, a healing from within. It happens not just in the baby in the stable, but it happens because that baby was born, because God stepped into our world, brought the kingdom of God into the kingdoms of this world, so that we could know that kind of completeness, that kind of life, that kind of peace.